And then over to one of our presenters, Emmy Laha, who's going to go over specific aspects of obtaining credit for the entire webinar series.
Yes, hello everybody. I'm Emerald Laha with the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office, or FFRRO for short. And hopefully most of you have already heard about the Federal Facilities Academy. So this is a voluntary training program that was developed for EPA RPMs, project managers from other federal agencies, states, and tribal groups who work on federal facility cleanups under Superfund. Again, it is completely voluntary, but the intent of this program is to offer training that is specific to federal facilities that helps to answer some of those challenges and questions that make federal facility cleanups different from what you would see perhaps at a private site where you're dealing with a private party. So we have been offering webinars approximately once per month, and so this is, I believe, the fourth one that we've offered so far. You can see the schedule on the slide that's on your screen right now, the rest we have planned out. There's 11 webinars total. We also have one in-person course that's part of this Federal Facilities Academy program that is only limited to like EPA and government employees and tribal representatives. Unfortunately, the in-person training does have some limitations, but when it comes to the webinars, these are available to the public. So anyone, be it if you're with a federal or state agency or with a contractor, you are more than welcome to take these trainings and participate in the program. And we highly encourage you to do so if you are involved with the federal facility cleanup. So we are here coordinating with tribes at federal facilities. This is our December webinar, and our next one will be offered in February, and that will cover RCRA CERCLA integration. So you can see the whole schedule there. We hope you'll sign up for as many or all of them if you're interested in each of these topics. So the next question that we get a lot is, well, how do I get credit for participating in this program? And there's a couple of different ways. So to get participation, for example, this webinar that you're participating in today, there's that feedback form that you'll see a link to towards the end of this webinar itself. Or on that registration page, once this is complete, you'll see that feedback form. If you click on that, you can fill it out and you will get credit for this particular course. And that's true for any of the webinars that are offered live. And also if you view the archived version, you can also get credit for that if for whatever reason you're not able to make the live showing. So definitely keep that in mind. And if you say you're in a room with a couple of other people, but you all want to get credit for that, right? You can definitely do that as well. The person who signed up for the course should get a link that can be shared with all of the participants so each individual can get credit for taking this webinar today. So keep that in mind if you're looking for that certificate. If you look on the homepage where we had all those different tabs with information available to people participating in the webinars, one of those is a tracking sheet. If you are setting yourself up for the goal to complete all of the webinars in this training program, we have a tracking sheet where you can keep track of the date, what course you took, or if you're doing an archive version, you can keep track of that as well. Make sure you're saving all of your certificates of completion so that you can get that final overall credit when you complete the program. Other materials that we have, someone referenced the participant manual. So if you want the slides and supplementary information that comes with the slides, look at that participant manual. That way you don't have to try and write everything down as we go, and you can really just take those additional notes that are helpful for you as you're participating in today's webinar. So coming back to getting credit, we have our online webinars offered live or archived. You fill out the feedback form to get credit. Use that tracker if you are taking all of the webinars in the program, and be sure to attend our in-person classroom training, which is on Trainix. Again, that's open only to EPA, states, tribes, and other federal agencies. And you'll get a certificate of completion for participation in that as well. So a number of you may have already taken that course. Keep all of that together, and then when you have checked every box, you'll be able to submit it for credit for the program. Hope, if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me, and I'd be happy to answer them. And I think that's everything as far as participation and credit in the program, Pete. So we can probably kick it off.
All right, so we have the slide presentation here loading, and I believe with Amanda Van Epps for our introduction and the first few slides. Amanda, whenever you're ready, feel free to start.
Okay, I'm just going to back up a little bit. Good morning, everyone. I'm Amanda Van Epps. I am an environmental engineer in the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. Gotta go back a little more. There we go. I work on a number of things on the Superfund side, and one of those roles is that I'm a Superfund Tribal Coordinator. I work primarily on private sites, but I also work closely with Emmy and Mary in their work on tribal coordination at federal facilities. And the purpose of our webinar today is to discuss how tribal consultation and coordination are used at federal facilities that are listed on the National Priorities List in accordance with CERCLA, or the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. So how we're using tribal consultation and coordination to work with tribes at federal facilities that are also Superfund sites, basically. And I think the first thing that we wanted to do was just to get a sense of who we are talking to today, who's in the audience. So we have a little poll to see, you know, what role those of you listening have filled when consulting or coordinating with tribes at federal facilities. So hopefully you will see a poll pop up, and you can tell us, are you an EPA RPM? Do you represent another federal agency? Do you represent a state? Do you represent a tribe, or are you a member of a tribe? And if none of those applies to you, you know, let us know which category we're missing. And I'll just give you all a minute to fill that out. And then we can take a look. Okay. So it looks like we have a good mix of people joining us today. So obviously some EPA representation, good representation from some other federal agencies. Looks like DOE, the Army. Trying to see what else we have here. U.S. Forest Service, good solid chunk representing states. Looks like not a tremendous amount of tribal representation, which is interesting. And also some consultants and other people. So thank you all for joining us, and hopefully we have, you know, good information to provide to all of those, you know, different roles that you're playing in this process. So just to give you a quick sort of overview of what we're going to cover today, first I will cover sort of the basics of what do we mean when we talk about consultation and coordination, and what are sort of EPA's policies when it comes to those things. Sort of more generally. And then from there, we'll move into the specifics of what that means at federal facility cleanups, and, you know, what role the EPA and another federal agency play in consultation. We'll cover how to identify a need for consultation, and also some tips for developing partnerships. And I think, you know, one important thing to keep in mind throughout this presentation is that there is no, you know, one-size-fits-all solution to how to do consultation and coordination at a federal facility NPL site. It's going to depend, obviously, on the site circumstances, the different players, the relationships among those different parties, and, you know, all of the nuances that differ from site to site. So just keep that in mind. I will cover just a little bit of EPA's policies when it comes to consultation and coordination, and there are a few different policies and executive orders that play into that. So the first one is the 1984 EPA policy for the administration of environmental programs on Indian reservations. And we sort of commonly refer to this as the 1984 EPA Indian policy. And this was actually the first formal Indian policy that was adopted by a federal agency. And it outlined 9 principles to help guide EPA's interaction with tribes. I'm not going to go through all of them, but just a couple of important ones that we continue to, you know, rely on heavily are that it stated that EPA would work directly with tribal governments on a one-to-one basis, that EPA would remove barriers to working with tribes and maintaining those tribal relationships, that we would assure that tribal concerns and interests are considered in our decisions in keeping with our federal trust responsibilities. And that, you know, importantly in this, in the context of this webinar, it also stated that we would coordinate with other federal agencies to support tribes. This wasn't really, you know, specific to or envisioning federal facility cleanups, but it is an important principle of EPA's Indian policy and guides our work at federal facility cleanup. So that was in 1984. And then in the year 2000, President Clinton issued Executive Order 13175 on consultation and coordination with Indian tribal governments. And this sort of, you know, was much broader than EPA and covered all of all executive departments and agencies. And this executive order charged agencies with engaging in regular and meaningful consultation and collaboration with tribal officials when we are developing federal policies that have tribal implications. And it also, you know, stated that we're responsible for strengthening that government-to-government relationship between the federal government and tribal governments. And, you know, it said the U.S. has a unique legal relationship with Indian tribal governments and that we recognize the right of Indian tribes to self-government. As domestic dependent nations, Indian tribes exercise inherent sovereign powers over their members and their territory. And we have to recognize those in, you know, the work that we do at EPA. It also specified, you know, yes, we will continue to work with Indian tribes on a government-to-government basis to address issues concerning tribal self-government, tribal trust resources, and tribal treaty and other rights. And it specified that each agency had to have an accountable process to ensure meaningful and timely input by tribal officials in the development of policies that have tribal implications. And, you know, it's important to keep in mind throughout this that a government-to-government relationship is different than, you know, a government-to-stakeholder relationship or anything like that. It's a unique, you know, one-to-one relationship on equal footing. And engagement with Indian tribes has to be more than just requesting public comment or hosting public meetings. We have to consult and coordinate with Indian tribal governments. So then in, you know, 2011, EPA issued a policy on consultation and coordination with Indian tribes. So the executive order sort of covered the whole government, and in 2011, EPA issued its own policy on consultation and coordination with Indian tribes. And it established national guidelines and controls for consulting with Indian tribes across the whole agency. And other federal agencies, you know, that might serve as a lead agency at a federal facility might have their own policies and guidance to follow when consulting with Indian tribes, but this is our policy at EPA. And among those principles or those guidelines are the consultation needs to occur early enough in your, you know, decision-making or action process for tribes to provide meaningful input that EPA can consider prior to a decision. And of course, this includes, you know, CERCLA actions throughout the Superfund process. It also states that consultation and coordination should continue as proposals and options are developed. And I think this is very important when we're thinking about the Superfund process. This is not a one-time, you can check the box and be done, and move on. There might be multiple points throughout the Superfund process where EPA is taking an action or making a decision that has tribal implications, and so it might be necessary to, consult with an Indian tribe at specific multiple decision points throughout the Superfund process. There is no, as I said before, there is no sort of single formula for what is appropriate for consultation. It will depend on, the parties involved, the relationship involved, the role that a tribe is playing, the role that EPA is playing, and all of those things. So, it has to be sort of tailored to the circumstances at a specific site. And while consultation is necessary when EPA is taking a decision or making a decision or taking an action that will have tribal implications, there is often a less formal process that we engage in sort of on a, routine basis for sort of routine operational matters that may not rise to the level of consultation. So on that point, there's this idea that we often talk about, consultation versus coordination, big C consultation versus little c coordination. And the 2011 consultation policy defined consultation as a process of meaningful communication and coordination between EPA and tribal officials prior to EPA taking actions or implementing decisions that may affect tribes. The sort of in contrast to that or in addition to that, we also engage in coordination with tribes. And coordination is, you might think of as sort of the more routine sharing of information, receiving information, doing education, doing some sort of outreach, ongoing communication, maybe at the staff level. And obviously, consultation requires coordination and can involve coordination. But coordination can't substitute for consultation. When we are making those decisions or taking those actions that have tribal implications, we are required to offer consultation to tribe before, before we actually make the decision or take the action. So coordination is very important to maintaining our relationship with tribes at both private and federal sites, but it cannot substitute for the work of consultation. So we wanted to do just a little quiz here and, test your knowledge, I guess, a little bit. So the idea here is, can you identify each of these activities as either a consultation or a coordination activity? And obviously there's no, you can think of an exception to every one of them, I imagine. But in general, what do you think about hosting an open house on a non-time critical removal action? Is that a consultation activity? Is that a coordination activity? Meeting with tribal leadership to discuss tribal concerns on a proposed plan and providing feedback on how their input was considered in that remedy decision, is that a consultation or a coordination activity? Exchanging emails with tribal technical representatives to clarify information and discuss concerns, or having a technical meeting to discuss the issues with tribal representatives and staff. So hopefully you can, for each of those, you can pick whether you think it's a consultation activity or a coordination activity or both. Or neither, I suppose.
Yeah, so hopefully everyone has figured out how to cast your vote in those two boxes at the bottom of your screen. One, if you think it's consultation, then you would check that box, or if you thought it was more of a coordination activity, then you would check the corresponding box next to that activity. And we can see a few more people are still getting their answers in, but we'll give it just a little more time and let Amanda go over the results.
Looks like we still have a few coming in, so I'll just give you a little bit, a few more seconds. Okay, so, like I said, you could probably envision an exception to every one of these, but in general, if I were guessing, I would probably guess that, and it looks like for the most part,
you all agreed with my feelings.
I would say that hosting an open house on a non-time critical and removal action is probably coordination. You know, open house is outreach and engagement with a community, but doesn't necessarily, doesn't necessarily meet the sort of criteria for a consultation. And the same is probably true with exchanging emails with tribal technical representatives to clarify information and discuss concerns, as well as having a technical meeting to discuss issues with tribal representatives and staff. It looks like, you know, the audience was a little more divided on that one and thought it might, you know, it might rise to the level of consultation. You know, it might depend on the circumstances and what was offered and to whom and whether it's immediately prior to a decision or action. But I was sort of guessing that, you know, 1, 3, and 4 were probably related to coordination, whereas number 2 sort of lays out the, you know, the meets the criteria, I'll say, for consultation in my mind. You're meeting with tribal leadership, which is important. You're discussing something before a decision is being made. And then the last part of consultation is sort of also that providing that feedback on how the input was considered in that final decision. So 2 certainly meets the criteria of consultation, and 1, 3, and 4 are probably more coordination activities. So with that, I will turn it over to Mary to sort of dive in a little bit more to settle facility cleanup.
Thanks, Vanda. This is Mary Cook, and I am with EPA's Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office. I work with Emmy, sort of her backup for a lot of the tribal, previous lead on tribal, but now I back up Emmy on a lot of the work we do with working with tribes and the other federal agencies. Before we jump into questions, I'm going to cover this overview relatively quickly, and then we can take a few minutes to see where we are on questions. Hopefully what we're going to go into here may clarify some of the questions I see popping up. So real quick discussion of EPA and generally federal facilities. Federal facilities include active and closed military installations, former nuclear production plants, abandoned mines and landfills, and types of contamination include radioactive waste, munitions, unexploded ordnance, mining waste, fuels, and solvents. There are 174 federal facilities on the National Priorities List, or the NPL, and EPA is responsible for overseeing the cleanup under CERCLA Section 120. Some may be located in areas that are culturally or historically significant to American Indian or Alaska Native groups. For example, some groups retain rights to hunt and fish on lands that are not located on tribal land, but may be impacted by releases from some of these federal facilities. Currently, there are 577 federally recognized tribes. A federally recognized tribe is an Indian or Alaska Native tribe, band, nation, pueblo, village, or community that the Secretary of the Interior has acknowledged to exist as an Indian tribe pursuant to the Federally Recognized Indian Tribe List Act of 1944. 25 U.S.C. 479A-B. Federal agencies work directly with federal recognized tribes as sovereign entities with primary authority and responsibility for each tribe's land and membership, and not as political subdivisions of states or other governmental units. State-recognized tribes are Native American Indian tribes, nations, and heritage groups that have been recognized by a process established under assorted state laws for varying purposes. State recognition confers limited benefits under federal law, and it's not the same as federal recognition, which is the federal government's acknowledgement of a tribe as a dependent sovereign nation. So you will see, get this up here, so, okay. When CERCLA was passed, it enabled the revision of the National Contingency Plan. The NCP is the federal government's blueprint for responding to both oil spills and hazardous substance releases. The NCP is the result of efforts to develop a national response capability and promote coordination among the hierarchy of responders and contingency plans. In 1987, the President signed Executive Order 12580, which delegates presidential authority under CERCLA to the heads of various executive branch agencies, which we refer to as the lead agency. And this is under certain circumstances, essentially making them that lead agency at sites where EPA provides oversight in accordance with federal facility agreements, or FFAs. 12580 delegated authorities to executive agencies to respond to releases in particular situations, such as initiating studies, investigations of releases on or from a facility under the jurisdiction, custody, or control of the federal agency, and select remedial actions at non-priorities list sites or non-NPL federal facilities, and they can conduct removal of remedial actions at these sites. And you'll hear us speak to the term lead agency throughout these slides. So we just spoke briefly about 12580, which delegated presidential authorities under CERCLA to the heads of various executive agency branches under certain circumstances. And in exercising these powers, these agencies are given responsibility to provide an opportunity for public participation. And this means that the other federal agencies, because of their role under 12580 and because of EPA's oversight role in these sites, the other federal agency is the lead agency for conducting CERCLA actions and tribal consultations at federal facilities. So at these federal facilities, EPA encourages a tribe seeking to consult with the United States to work directly with the federal agency with the most direct responsibility for the action or decision in question. So as an example, we're going to speak a little bit later about a site called Hanford. The lead agency at that site is Department of Energy. We as EPA may work in a coordination role, but that consultation role, that lead agency role, is Department of Energy. FIFRO's tribal program, we strive to protect the health of American Indians and Alaska Native villagers at or near federal facilities. And FIFRO's goals are to develop partnerships that will enhance participation and the environmental decision-making process at federal facilities through meaningful coordination that respects the unique needs of each tribal community, to provide technical and regulatory oversight at NPL sites to ensure protection of human health, effective program implementation, and meaningful public involvement, and to identify contaminated sites on or near tribal land, as well as site property that may be transferred to tribes. FIFRO's priorities focus primarily on ensuring a meaningful government-to-government coordination and tribal involvement in the cleanup decision-making process so that tribal concerns can be addressed. Tribal governments have distinct roles in cleanups at federal facilities under treaties with the U.S. government. And accordingly, EPA works in partnership with tribal governments both at the federal facility level and at a national policymaking level. One thing that I'd like to point out at this and for all of the slides we're going to be talking about, tribal governments should also be an advocate for themselves so they can ensure that their needs and concerns are heard as well. So CERCLA and the OPA, or Oil Pollution Act, authorize United States, and Indian tribes to act on behalf of the public as natural resource trustees for natural resources under their respective trusteeship. Tribes often have information and technical expertise about the biological effects of hazardous substances, as well as the location of sensitive species and habitats that can assist in characterizing the nature and extent of site-related contamination and impacts. Tribes will also provide a unique perspective regarding species of plants and animals that have a distinct cultural value that are sometimes overlooked when considering sensitive species, as well as locations of ceremonial uses and cultural significance of interest for the tribes. Coordination at the investigation and planning stages can benefit both CERCLA and natural resource damages efforts. The Federal Indian Trust Responsibility is a legal obligation under which the United States has charged itself with moral obligations of the highest responsibility and trust towards Indian tribes. The Federal Indian Trust Responsibility is also a legally enforceable fiduciary obligation on the part of the United States to protect tribal treaty rights, lands, assets, and resources, as well as a duty to carry out the mandates of federal law with respect to American Indian and Alaskan Native tribes and villages. So to briefly summarize, tribes gave up or ceded certain rights and vast territory to the United States government through treaties. In those treaties, the federal government made promises to tribes regarding the protection of lands and rights that they did not give up. The federal trust responsibility arises from treaties, statutes, executive orders, and the ongoing historical relations between the United States and tribes. It's important to consider that the ceded lands may also hold spiritual or cultural meaning to the tribes and affect their religious practices. Cleanup actions should be consistent with the protection of tribal rights arising from these treaties, statutes, and executive orders. In many treaties, especially those negotiated early on in the 1850s and 1860s, the tribal governments reserved hunting, fishing, and gathering rights in territories beyond the land that they reserved for occupation. For example, in the Northwest, in Northwest treaties, these were typically called usual and accustomed places. And usual and accustomed lands are generally streams, rivers, or shorelines, which a tribe usually traveled or was accustomed to travel for the purposes of, say, taking in fish, generally outside the reservation boundaries. And it's possible for usual and accustomed areas to extend beyond treaty area boundaries and to overlap with large areas of a neighboring tribe based on specific treaty language. So another apply your understanding here. I believe we have another quiz to pop up. Yep, here we go. So applying your understanding, at a federal facility listed on the NPL, the agency responsible for conducting consultations with tribes would either be A, the EPA, B, state, C, community groups, or D, the lead agency. Give a couple more seconds here as we're doing this, but where do you think the consultation responsibility lies? Is it with the state, EPA, community groups, or the lead agency? I just see we have sort of a pretty good lead here on lead agency, and that's correct. That answer is D. Although the lead agency is responsible for consulting with tribes, EPA, and state agencies, and state agencies, we can coordinate with tribes to help address concerns and answer technical questions. We can be at the table to help promote those conversations. But lead agency itself, under Executive Order 12580, falls under the agency who has jurisdiction, custody, or control, and that will be your other federal agency. And the vast majority of the sites we're talking about today, which are the 174 NPL sites, that fall under Circle 120.
Great, thanks, Mary. That was an interesting quiz. It's nice to see how the answers come in and pan out as we're going through the slides. But we're going to switch gears a little bit now and start focusing on this question of, well, how do I identify a need for consultation? Like, what does that look like? And that's part of what we are hoping to deliver with this webinar, is to help you better understand what situations may arise in which you have to do consultation for your site. So just a quick recap, consultation is triggered whenever an agency decision, activity, or action may affect tribal interests. Now that's a big phrase, right? May affect tribal interests. That could cover a lot of different things. So how do you answer that question if consultation is needed for the work that you're doing? keep in mind, again, that the consultation process may include several methods of interaction, part of that coordination aspect of developing relationships, opening communication between the different groups that are involved, which could be, you know, individual meetings, phone calls, emails, what have you. That can look like a lot of different things when it comes to coordination, but what does consultation mean and when should it be conducted? So here are a few things to think about. I'm going to get to some specific questions you can ask yourself, but before we jump to that, let's look at the big C of consultation. So it's a process through which the lead agency interacts with tribal governments when actions and decisions in the remedial process, that being the remedial process under CERCLA, may affect tribal interests. Those informal interactions are going to help improve the situation when a need for consultation does arise, because you'll have established those relationships through regular interactions between the project team, which is going to include your remedial project manager, your technical experts, and the other team members, you know, state reps who might be on that team, other, you know, your hydro, your geologists, what have you, all your technical representatives. And when you're getting to that point of where formal consultation is needed, keep in mind that's going to be a different group of actors potentially. You're going to be going up the management chain to offer consultation to tribal leadership and also within your own, be it federal or state agency, if you're involved in those discussions, going up to your manager or your next, you know, higher up the chain, depending what the appropriate level is based on your agency. So again, coming back to this question, how do I know if I need to conduct consultation for my site? Well, here are a couple of questions you could ask yourself to start figuring this out. Do tribal members use resources from the impacted zone, like that area that you're looking to implement a cleanup remedy? Do tribal members use resources there? Is a tribe a natural resource trustee of the affected resource, be it soil or surface water or what have you? Is the affected area within a tribal historic area or traditional cultural property? Maybe you're new to the site team and you really have no idea what the answer to that question is. Well, it's going to be a steep learning curve, but this is something that you should be familiar with if you're on a site team that's working to implement cleanup at a site that has tribal interests. Also, another question you could ask yourself is, the affected area linked, be it ecologically, culturally, visually, or hydraulically, to the tribal resources or uses? So if you go through all of those questions and you answer yes to any of them, then you're likely going to need to reach out to the tribe to start conducting those coordination activities and being in a position to effectively offer consultation to tribal leadership should the time arise or the need arise for that. So these are not the only questions you can ask yourself, but it's a good starting point to help you self-identify, like, oh, yeah, there conversations, interactions need to be held here. How do I start working with my team to make sure that that happens? Hopefully you found that helpful. So just to look more broadly at the CERCLA process, like when to offer consultation when you're doing a CERCLA response action. We touched on the fact that EPA at these federal facility sites on the MPL is in a regulatory oversight role, and the state might also be helping with that regulatory oversight, and you'll have another federal agency serving as the lead agency. Well, regardless, we're still doing CERCLA cleanups of these sites on the MPL. So under CERCLA, opportunities to conduct consultation are listed here on this slide. If you're doing an emergency response, okay, usually notification is the best you can do in a truly emergency situation. There's just not time to do or have other types of interactions. In a time-critical removal, you may have time to consult, so you will consult as time allows. Say you have 3 to 4 months. Well, that should be time to reach out and start having conversations as needed on that action. For non-time critical removal, you have that 6 months or more planning period. Consultation, if needed, should be occurring. And again, what does if needed mean? Are there tribal interests on the area that's affected, the area that you want to implement this cleanup action, or those resources that are being used by tribal groups? And when it comes to remedial actions, you have a longer time frame, a longer planning period, and again, consultation should be occurring in those remedial actions. And again, it's not one and done, right? It may be needed at multiple points in the CERCLA process, depending on, you know, how much concern there is for what's being considered for the site. Again, it's not one size fits all, and it's not one and done. It's a longer conversation than that. So here are some examples of decision points in the Superfund process where consultation might occur. So site proposals or finalizations of sites to be added to the NPL. Granted, for federal facilities, we don't add a ton of sites to our list, but should we be in a position where that's occurring, then that would be one opportunity for consultation. If you're in your remedial investigation and feasibility study stage, your RIFS, and you're beginning to consider cleanup alternatives, you're understanding the extent of contamination at your site, early in the process, that is a great time to start having conversations with the tribal nations who are interested in cleanup at your site. A lot of information is coming to light, and it's great to hear earlier versus at the very end of the process so you can adapt as needed to those concerns. Also, as you're moving along and you're getting ready to issue a proposed plan, you've vetted out some of those cleanup alternatives, you've identified a preferred alternative for the site. Before that proposed plan hits the streets for a formal public comment period, you should have reached out to the tribes to, I heard a little bit background there. So if that proposed plan hits the streets in advance of that, you should be having, again, your coordination activities, which can be ongoing, be it regular meetings or emails or other types of communications, but also offering to tribal leadership that opportunity to have a consultation, especially when you have a preferred alternative identified. That is a great opportunity to have the necessary conversations regarding cleanup. And then at the very end of our Superfund process, getting to NPL deletions is another opportunity for offering consultation. And keep in mind, if you are at that point where you are actually looking to delete a site from the NPL, there's a number of other notifications that need to take place as well. We have some great guidance. I think I have it on your reference list. I'm frantically looking for it here. Amanda, can you, here we go. It's our 2011 policy. No, that's the wrong policy. Amanda, are you on the line? Can you help me out?
I am. It's the closeout procedures.
That's right. The 2011 guidance on closeout procedures for national priorities list sites. Super, super helpful piece of guidance from EPA if you're actually at that deletion phase and you're doing a federal facility cleanup. We all want to get there, right, eventually. So coming back to this process and the different points in which consultation may be appropriate. These are just a few examples, and it might be that all of these points in the CERCLA process are appropriate for consultation at your site. I want to switch now to another graphic. This came from a GAO report that was looking at phases in the Superfund cleanup process when the EPA should document consultation with tribes. And it's just another figure that's identified appropriate points in the Superfund process for conducting consultation. I'll talk a little bit in a second about the importance of documentation, but again, in this graphic, you see, okay, NPL listing in that RIFS, like it's never too soon to start having a conversation, getting to that proposed plan and a record of decision for sure. You want to be doing those coordination activities and offering consultation and following through on consultation as appropriate. Okay, so I mentioned this importance of documentation. So the correspondence, those things like emails, formal letters, if you have any records of phone calls, et cetera, between the lead agency and the tribe providing documents or information is really important. Documentation of meetings as well, be it agenda or meeting notes, these are things that may be included in the administrative record. Particularly if there's discussions around ARARs, that might be something that you want to document as well. But one thing to keep in mind when you're working with the tribes, and we'll reference some guidance documents that help with this topic as well, is always to be aware of sensitivities. Is there information that is culturally sensitive, that cannot be shared with the public, that has to be kept to a a much smaller circle of people. These are also conversations that you should be having between your lead agency, regulators, and the tribes to really clearly understand if there are cultural sensitivities to information that is discussed at these meetings. So just something to be aware of. Talk it through, and ultimately you'll be, as a group, will be able to identify which materials are not sensitive and can be shared, or which cannot be shared in that forum. So something to keep in mind. Because if you're going through all the work of documentation, you want to be able to show what you've done, right? That yes, in fact, we are striving to meet our obligations, and these are the different communications and events that we've held to be able to meet our obligations for consultation. So that paper trail is helpful, but just make sure that you're aware and sensitive to it as well. So that was a lot of information. I want to pause for a second and hear from you all for a bit. We have another Apply Your Understanding slide, or I hate to call it a quiz, but we'd just like to get some feedback from everyone participating in the webinar. So here it is. Which of the following is not an example of a way to build relationships between government agencies and tribal governments involved in federal facility cleanups? So you see your multiple choice answers at the bottom of your screen. So is it interacting with representatives from each group on a regular basis, hosting a technical meeting or workshop to discuss a proposed cleanup approach, calling a representative from one of the groups with questions or concerns, and lastly, waiting until a cleanup decision is reached before engaging with tribal governments affected by the cleanup? So I don't think we have to wait too much longer. I think everybody is pretty much on the same page, that if you're waiting until a cleanup decision is reached, and for example, you're signing a ROD before you're engaging with tribal governments, that is not a good example of how to build relationships. So good one there for everyone who participated. So we're gonna go ahead and keep chugging along to our next slide with tips for developing partnerships with Mary.
Great, thanks, Emmy. So consultation should occur early enough to allow tribes the opportunity to provide meaningful input, and you've heard us say this on a number of slides, that can be considered prior to EPA deciding whether, how, or when to act on the matter under consideration. As proposals and options are developed, consultation and coordination should be continued to ensure that the overall range of options and decisions is shared and deliberated by all concerned parties. There's no single formula for what constitutes appropriate consultation, and the analysis, planning, and implementation of consultation should consider all aspects of the action under consideration. It's best to build upon the ongoing communication and coordination with tribal representatives and tribal governments. Early engagement, again, something you've heard us mention repeatedly, with tribal representatives is important part of ensuring tribal concerns are considered in the decision-making process. And again, make sure that we are aware of sensitivity to confidentiality concerns and make sure that we document appropriately. Bringing in the appropriate parties, be it federal agency, state, or tribe, and early on in the process for consultations, better than having a disagreement that could result in having to revisit decisions down the road. You don't want to have to open up previously decided records of decision, or even something as simple as a sampling and analysis plan that we've all worked together on, because we didn't take into consideration. I'm sorry, I'm getting feedback. That we didn't have the right people at the table to have these discussions early on, or that we just didn't consider these. So establishing and maintaining communication between that lead cleanup agency, who is the federal agency who is the lead at the site, EPA, and the tribal representatives will facilitate identifying concerns and common goals early in the cleanup process. And this will allow more time for these issues to be worked through and ultimately resolved. And again, to these efforts, although these efforts will require a little bit more time and effort up front, it'll likely help avoid significant delays later in the process, particularly when we're developing and issuing the CERCLA Record of Decision. Developing partnerships is a key factor in successfully achieving a final goal. One key component is through establishing relationships between representatives so that these conversations can take place more regularly. And establishing and maintaining communication between the lead agency, EPA, and tribal reps will facilitate identifying these concerns earlier in the cleanup process. I said that earlier, and I'm going to repeat it here because I think it's incredibly important. So there are multiple ways to communicate concerns. Written comments provided in hard copy or by mail may be helpful when communicating technical levels or technical concerns on a document, let's say an RIFS, a proposed plan. We have phone conversations that could be helpful with a quick question, maybe the purpose of a document or an anticipated schedule that we're trying to identify for making a decision. In-person meetings are very helpful when discussing technical concerns as well, maybe clarifying a situation or question, and help to establish relationships between tribal and agency representatives. Try to be cognizant of the potential for miscommunication, though. There are a lot of instances where people may have the same goal, but you have use of varying jargon results in a conflict, which is entirely surmountable. It's important to understand that what each group means and identify how each needs or each group's needs can be addressed. And also keep in mind that people have different communication styles and personalities, and that these can also increase miscommunications. We may be looking at the same thing, but have a different way of looking at it. Regular interactions may include technical meetings, quarterly check-ins, or whatever type of interaction works best for those involved. And that's something that as a team, you may want to decide on, again, relatively early in the process. Discuss ongoing concerns and provide opportunity for face-to-face discussion. Developing that informal relationship and creating an environment of a more open communication can be critical to understanding the root of a disagreement and working towards resolving the issues. It may also help groups be prepared in the event that there's a formal consultation needed in the future. And it's important to remember that relationships are based on trust. Tribal representatives must believe that you, as a federal representative, are telling the truth and that you're listening to their concerns with an open mind and that you're going to consider changing the course of the action based on their input. Hey, Em, we have a Hanford case study.
Right. Thank you, Mary. So we've been talking a lot about, tips for how to develop these partnerships, what some of our guidance says, what regulatory documents say, but we always like to try and provide a real-world example to make it fit a little better, or at least help you understand a little bit better what we're trying to convey. So one of the case studies we have for this webinar is looking at Hanford. So Hanford is where we developed most of our plutonium during the Cold War. So for about 45 years of operation in plutonium production, there was massive amounts of soil and groundwater discharges that resulted in contamination of those lands. And before, the Hanford site existed in this south central part of Washington State, there were tribal groups living there, living off the land. It wasn't empty, and then Hanford happened. That land was actually ceded to the United States under separate treaties with tribal nations. There are three treaties that cover the site. There's one with the Confederate Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. There's one with the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation, and a treaty with the Nez Perce Tribe. So given this is a federal facility on the NPL, we have a lead agency, which is the Department of Energy. So those obligations to conduct consultation activities fall to DOE. Although EPA can play a role with helping to facilitate those conversations and to help remind the lead agency that they're meeting their obligations to provide consultation, we can help, EPA can help those efforts by having technical meetings or regular communications with tribal representatives to discuss their concerns. Because there may be times when there's overlap between regulatory concerns for a site and tribal concerns. So in those cases, if there's that overlap, then when EPA is advocating for what it needs to see to have a, you know, a satisfactory cleanup, it might be that the tribe's interests are also represented in those types of conversations, which is why we always say EPA can help play a role even though we are not the lead agency with that consultation obligation for the site. We're still all part of the site team, and we're all still involved in getting to those cleanup decisions. So this is just one example. I want to pause for a second. I believe we have Casey Mitchell on the line, who is with the Nez Perce tribe, who was going to speak for a few minutes with us on his experience with Hanford cleanup and just the opportunity to hear from a non-federal government person on this webinar. Casey, can you let me know if you're on the line?
Thank you, Em. This is Casey. I am on the line. Sorry, I don't have my camera set up.
Oh, that's okay. We're glad that you're with us. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk a little bit more about consultation?
Sure, definitely. I just want to first thank you for the invite to join this webinar. Definitely appreciate it, bringing the tribes in and listening to concerns and experiences. I think it's a great step forward in how we can improve our relationship with DOE and just in with tribes in general. But first, like she mentioned, my name is Casey Mitchell. I serve as the treasurer for the Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee, which is the governing body for the Nez Perce Tribe. It's a 9-person committee with myself as the treasurer, and we have a chairman, vice chairman, secretary, treasurer, and assistant secretary treasurer, with the other ones as just members. So that's how our governing body works, and we have multiple treaties with the United States government, starting with the 1855 treaty. Unfortunately, each treaty that we made with the government shrunk our reservation due to the fact that the settlers found gold, and so our reservation went from 13 million acres down to 750,000 acres, which is what we have now with the 1863 treaty with the United States, which is what we call the thief treaty, because it was signed and not with all the necessary chiefs, just the ones that seemed to be coaxed into believing one way. So, you know, that treaty is really tough for us to accept, but it's what we have today. But we do still have hunting, fishing, gathering rights on our ceded lands, which is that first treaty we have, which is the 13 million acres, which goes from south central Idaho into Washington, Oregon, Montana, and parts of Wyoming, all the way down to southern Idaho, which is why we have a definite responsibility, but also history with the Hanford site, with the other tribes there, the Wanapum, the Umatilla, and the Yakima. We all share those, the site for ceremonies and gathering and hunting and fishing. That used to be a, not only village sites there, but they used to have a celebration there where all the tribes would come for just a celebration for tribes, where we trade and do all kinds of other things when tribes get together. So it was more than just a village site or sacred site. The tribe used to meet there a lot, and tribes actually lived there. So we have a strong history with the Hanford site, and so that's why we really have high responsibility and respect for that area, and want to be able to be involved in every aspect that we can to help the cleanup process there. We know it's not a easy process due to the fact of all the policies and procedures that we follow. But one thing that is definitely starting to come to light is for us being able to communicate better. You know, the site, the footprint is getting smaller, which is great. I mean, that's good news on every aspect that the footprint is getting smaller. We know the hard work is starting to come to fruition with a lot of the good cleanup that's happening, but we all know that there's still a lot of work to be done, and there's still a lot out there that can hurt and damage the environment as well as ourselves. So, you know, I know we got to be careful on the cleanup levels when we're starting to get to the point of seeing a lot of progress happening. Just a quick bio on myself of how involved I am with the Hanford site is I did my internship at Hanford, which is where I met Emmy. She took me on a tour of some of the pump and treat systems out there, so it was good to see her in Nashville. I thought I recognized her, so I was like, yeah, I remember you, Emmy. Way back when, you gave me a tour of the pump and treat systems out there, so that was good. But that was, you know, a while ago when I was still in college. So I did my internship there, and I also worked for our environmental restoration program here in Lapway before I got on council. So I was really involved with a lot of Hanford activities. I was on the senior trustee council before I got on our council here, but I had to resign from that once I got on the tribal council. But those that experience that I had with not only working with Hanford, but also being a part of the trustee council has really given me a insight and experience on the way tribes work with not only with DOE, but the other entities that are there. It's Hanford is a very complex site. I'm sure all the other ones is complex as well because of everything that's involved. But I do have hold on, my computer went off, a couple comments I wanted to make, and then we can move on with your slides. I didn't know how much time you wanted to give me, but
No, we'd love to hear your comments, Casey, and if you have any particular examples of a consultation or a coordination activity that you'd like to share from your first-hand experience, we'd love to hear that as well.
Okay. I'll just go with the comments that I have here. I know, you know, for the tribes, for us as Nez Perce tribe, I know we're there with other tribes, and, you know, I can't speak for them in person, for Umatilla or Yakima or Wanapum, but I'm speaking from a Nez Perce perspective. Even though we do have a lot of commonalities, that involve working with DOE. I'll just speak on the NSPRS ones. You know, for us, coordination cannot substitute for consultation. Yeah, unfortunately, it appears that DOE is coordinating, but sometimes not consultating. Or consulting, sorry about that. So I think that's something that's definitely good to recognize. I'm just going to go down on some of the comments that I made prior. Looking through the slides, you don't have to turn back, but on slide 10, it mentions meeting with tribal leadership to discuss tribal concerns is the only example considered consultation. Unfortunately, however, it seems DOE only rarely meets the tribal leadership to discuss tribal concerns. Rather recently, it appears that DOE may schedule a meeting with tribal leadership to discuss initiatives DOE is advancing rather than obtaining feedback from tribal leadership on issues that may affect the tribe. So this is, I think when I got on earlier, you guys were discussing, you know, sometimes getting ahead of ourselves and making plans and everything without proper consultation. So I think that with that comment, that's what I'm sort of speaking to. For clarification, I made comments for each slide, and I want to apologize for coming into the webinar late. I had a meeting that ran over here. Slide 15. It is notable that EPA may play a facilitation or coordination role if necessary. How has EPA served as a facilitator for tribes with respect to DOE actions in the past, and how can EPA serve as a facilitator today? Maybe we can write that question down, Emmy, and if we can possibly get back to that, that would be great. Slide 17 discusses the role of tribal governments, and a lot of these I really had questions, so I hope I'm not messing up the flow of the webinar by coming in late and having our concerns. But how can tribes participate in a meaningful manner of decision making when, for example, the tribes are not party to agreements such as the Hanford Tribe Party Agreement? The NSPRS tribe has consistently provided feedback on DOE proposed plans, yet this feedback does not appear to be reflected in DOE's actions. How can the tribe be assured that any consultation will be considered in decision making? And then I got five more comments, and then that'll be it for me. Slide 20, it's notable for its dimension that federal trust responsibility and the statement that cleanup actions should be considered with protection of tribal rights arising from treaties, statutes, and executive orders. And this is true. Why are there so many instances in which tribal input regarding cleanup actions is ignored? This seems particularly true at the Hanford site, where despite providing years of technical analysis and comments, the tribe comments have consistently not been incorporated into cleanup actions. And I know that a lot of this is coming from the national meetings we had. There was a lot of discussion on coordination and consultation and being able to involve the input of tribes, and you know, how is that reflected? So slide 21, although the agency is responsible for consulting with tribes, EPA and state agencies can coordinate with tribes to help address their concerns and answer technical questions. DOE has historically not been receptive to implementing the tribe's comments or feedback if EPA or the state do not support the tribe's position. 523, consultation is triggered whenever agency decisions, activities, or actions may affect tribal interests. Unfortunately, the tribe is typically not consulted about DOE activities prior to DOE making decisions or implementing actions because it is not required in the tri-party agreement. When to conduct consultation in CERCLA response action at all stages requiring decisions by lead agencies. Slide 27. Key decisions and consultation points during CERCLA implementation. Proposed plans, record of decisions. Okay, I see that slide. Thank you. And I just had one more, slide 33. Although EPA does not serve as the lead cleanup agency at most federal facility cleanups, EPA can help provide information and opportunities to discuss with tribal representatives. And I guess another question for EPA is, what are some examples of how EPA has helped tribes working with other lead agencies in the past? So I know when I was going over the slides for this, and you know, a lot of questions and concerns came from my end, but I know you, the main part was asking for, you know, what experiences we had, and I was kind of going from that, and a lot of it was due to the comments I made about just the comments that tribes make and how those are reflected in EPA decisions. I think it was really been the point I was trying to make with some of the comments that I made last week. But overall, I feel that the EPA and the tribes are making great steps in finally, you know, talking about the issues that have come up repeatedly as far as really how the tribes can help the process. I know a lot of the cleanup efforts are made to they're set to a standard that is not as the land used to be. It's set to a standard that what we feel that is standard for today. I mean, if we're not working to put the land back as close as we can to the way it used to be so it can be used by not only the tribal members, but the community, because, you know, we're not the only ones that pick berries and eat some of the roots and fish and hunt. So we know that it's not only, even though those are, a lot of those are tribal activities, non-tribals do a lot of that stuff as well. So I think that, and I mentioned this in Nashville, that's where there's a real disconnect in cleanup efforts between what we hope was going to be the standard for cleanup, getting it back to the land being usable again, not for today's standards, but for what the land was originally used for the land to provide for the people. And just those, all in there with those closing comments, and maybe we can come back to some of those questions at the end if we have time. So I wanted to thank you all for your time, and definitely if you have any questions for me, I'll be available on the webinar as we move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey, so much. We appreciate having another perspective, a tribal perspective, to bring to this conversation, because it's very easy for our agencies, you know, for EPA to get up here and say, well, this is what our guidance says, this is what our agency says, but it is very great to have a bit of a reality check of where the challenges are, where, like, all the things that you were sharing with us and your experience in participating in cleanup at Hanford, and the fact that you're, like, saying it doesn't seem like our feedback is being considered. It doesn't seem like consultation is happening the way that it should based on, you know, the guidance and the regulations that you're citing. So I think it's a great reality check, and I'm going to just pause and see if we had any questions come in specific to Casey to answer. We can address those now or a little later in the webinar if you're still typing your questions in, because I think all the points you brought up are fair points. Yes, we can share tips on how to develop partnerships, but that doesn't address the very last comment that you made, that CERCLA is based on selecting cleanup remedies that are within a certain risk range, which is not the same as pristine cleanup. And where does that leave us? It definitely just highlights the need to have the coordination and the consultation. And consultation is not just federal agencies sitting to listen to tribal concerns and then never considering the input or never closing the loop to explain how the input was considered, how or why it wasn't, if that's the case. Like, closing that communication loop and continuing the conversation, I think we're learning, is someplace all our agencies could get better. That's a place for vast improvement when it comes to continuing those conversations. So I'm going to pause for a second and just see if we had any questions specific for Casey. I don't think any have come in yet. So if it's okay with the group, we'll continue with our slides. And remember, if you have questions coming in, you can type them into the box. I know we had a few come in earlier. Hopefully some of these slides have addressed your questions so far, but we definitely want to answer any questions that our participants on the webinar have today. So I'll just let the questions, you know, keep typing those in. If you're ready to ask, Casey, I'll come back to you once we're answering questions from the group. But I'd like to continue with our slides for now. I think one question that was brought up is, okay, so this input is provided, and so what? What happens? Well, the next part of this case study that I want to share is an example of how this affected a cleanup decision at the Hanford site. So this was an interaction with the Yakima Nation at Hanford. So Hanford, a couple of years ago, was working on a record of decision for an area along the Columbia River known as the 100 DNH reactor areas. And originally it was expected that the record of decision would be signed in the October 2017 timeframe. At this time, EPA changed its processes for records of decision that had a price tag of $50 million or more. And at these very large and complex sites, that could be every record of decision to come. So now we had this process where our administrator, the EPA administrator, wanted to be briefed on this record of decision to better understand, you know, not only the cost, but the cleanup being considered as well. In that process, one of the questions that was asked was, have tribal concerns been addressed so far in the CERCLA process for this record of decision? And when that question was asked, it was a matter of fact, no, not all tribal concerns have been addressed. In fact, there are major concerns that are being brought up from the Yakima Nation that have yet to be considered or not considered in this record of decision as drafted. So that ended up with the administrator and the project team being instructed to address those concerns. So it allowed for an initial 6-month delay to allow the Department of Energy to continue these consultation activities, because we couldn't check that box. We couldn't say, yes, you know, the tribe has been involved, consultation has occurred, and tribal concerns have been addressed, when that was not the situation. So 6-month delay, which ended up being a little bit longer to allow for sufficient technical meetings and back and forth between the groups. Again, coordination activities, as well as the actual consultation itself, had to occur. So for the consultation meetings, that's when you had tribal leadership going very far up the management chain for DOE and EPA, bringing all the appropriate parties together to have those consultation meetings, and then the coordination activities from the technical staff, project team, all in between. A lot of activity in a condensed amount of time to be able to address those concerns. Ultimately, the ROD was finally issued in July of 2018 with a letter of support from the Yakima Nation. So the whole point of this example here is, so what if you don't do your homework, so to speak? What if you're not coordinating and conducting consultation as needed? That can very much lead to not getting a ROD signed, be it with, I mean, this was about a 9-month delay, but the results could be, you know, longer delays or bigger issues that can't be resolved. So again, another reason to start looking at these processes earlier in the CERCLA process so that concerns can be discussed. I mean, it doesn't mean everyone's going to get their own way, that the lead agency is going to implement the cleanup exactly how they want, or that we'll be able to deliver a cleanup to the tribal nations exactly as they want. The world is not so simple to be so black and white, right? There's going to have to be a lot of discussions and compromise where some things that are just not possible can't be done. But what is possible and what is acceptable? And if without those conversations between the different groups involved, you're never going to know. Being in the dark is as much a problem as not including, you know, having that feedback loop where input is being considered and if not implemented is being explained as to why it could not be implemented. All of that conversation really needs to happen, or else there's going to be these questions like we just heard from Casey, like we provide this input and then it seems like nothing happens with it. So where is the consultation in that situation? So again, just a real life example of how this might end up affecting a cleanup that you might be working on. And one bit of advice that I would give to the group, I think there was almost a sense of fear to reach out to the tribal nations, like, well, I don't want to ask the question and now I'm in trouble because we didn't do consultation early enough in the process, or like that sense of almost fear, like I don't want to ask because I don't want to know the answer, or I'm scared of what the answer might be. Like, we really need to be able to communicate and develop relationships to deal with these cleanups and to get cleanups that are acceptable, not only to protect human health and the environment, but to also address other obligations that our agencies have. And it really, really at its basis starts with communication. So I'll step off that soapbox for a second. And before we go into tools that can help you as you're trying to identify this need for consultation and where you could get more information on what's happening around your site, I'm just going to pause for a second and see if any additional questions have come in.
Hey, Emily, this is Mary, and I'm going to jump on the soapbox that you just jumped off. I said earlier, and I think this is really important. You said don't be nervous to go to the tribes and say, hey, you know, I know we maybe have been able to do this earlier, but we're here now and let's have this conversation for fear that, you know, maybe you will have to do additional work. But as a tribe, I think it's also really important that, I mentioned this earlier, you need to be an advocate for yourself. Like we heard from Casey's situation, you know, sometimes EPA or the other federal agency or the state may not be as upfront as the tribe believe they should be. And you need to advocate for you need to be your own advocate. You need to advocate for your tribe. You need to advocate for the land. And if it's the other federal agency that's giving, that you feel you aren't getting a response from, maybe that's where EPA, and we can't necessarily consult officially, but we can offer to act as that liaison or as a facilitator for a discussion so that we can make sure that that voice is being heard. It may not sound like a lot, but if you don't feel like anybody's in your corner, maybe just having that extra voice might help facilitate those conversations. And I'll be giving you guys a little later some some links on where to go for the other federal agencies' points of contact. But it's communication's just, it's huge in these conversations. And I think we all want to get to that same place, I believe, and being at the table all speaking with one voice sometimes helps.
Hey, Mary, I saw a question come in that asked, does consultation have any teeth, or is it just input? Like, is it purely procedural, or are tribes guaranteed substantive outcomes within certain circumstances?
I think it depends on your definition of outcome. So consultation has teeth. It's an executive order. And Amanda, I'm gonna blip on this one. I want to say it's 13175. I could be wrong. We discussed this earlier.
That's correct. You got it.
Ah, yes. I'm getting it. that is the executive order that says to all of the federal agencies, you know, thou shalt consult. That's not a maybe. That's a, if you're impacting tribes, there is a process that you should have adopted, and there should be policies. Like EPA has, we have our own policies and guidances in place for our consultation processes. DOE should have theirs as well, as should DOD. Everybody should have their own process they should be following. Then that's why I said, we may be helpful to be that other voice at the table, even though it may not be our role to consult. But there is an executive order that says that should be happening. And if it's not, point it out. And it's, you're well within your rights to say, hey, there's a process foul here, and call them out on it.
So Amanda and Mary, I have one more question I'll ask before we get to the tools section. Does consultation documentation include ensuring treaty rights are met? Meaning, will CERCLA cleanup will achieve a level of protection suitable for tribal uses such as hunting and fishing rights? Like, I don't think there's a checklist where we would say, oh, you have to check every item that refers to a treaty that applies to a site. Like, I don't think it's that clear.
No, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I don't think that we can actually say will, because there's an outside of it just, what if we can never attain that idea of pristine, and that's what the tribe's looking for, that's what anybody would be looking for. It just may not be able to be done under CERCLA. I don't know that we would say will. And there's some other issues that we have that sort of take us into, you heard me mention earlier, you know, there may be a lack of desire to share full information for whatever reason. We may be doing a risk assessment and the tribe is not necessarily, and Amanda could definitely speak to this more than I can, but there may be a reluctance to give information, be it because of location or just a lack of trust to share information on what we would need to run a risk assessment the way Superfund would run a risk assessment. And so it makes it difficult to move forward and to come up with maybe a right path or a good cleanup number. And so again, that sort of ties into the trust. As long as you can have those conversations, you have a better chance you'll have a good outcome for everybody. But the hard conversations have to happen.
Right. Amanda, did you want to add anything?
Sure, I would just add, I mean, I'm an engineer, not an attorney, so you know, I can't speak sort of definitively from the law side of things. I mean, I think the challenge for us in Superfund is that we are given certain authorities by CERCLA, and we have to act within the bounds of that. And so we do have a policy on consideration of tribal treaty rights in the Superfund remedial program that we issued in 2017, and I think that that's probably among the links that Emmy provided. And I think that, you know, Mary has pointed out some of the challenges that come along with it, that achieving, you know, pristine levels may not be reasonable technically. As she pointed out, you know, tribes somehow for reasons of confidentiality or, you know, their own sovereignty may not be willing to share information that we would like to have for, you know, risk assessment or other design purposes. And so while we endeavor to, you know, reach those standards, I can't say that, you know, I can't speak sort of definitively or with certainty on all situations.
All right, thanks, Amanda. Mary, would you like to start with the tools?
Sure thing. Okay, so here's some tools for identifying contaminated lands. The first tool that we see here, the first bullet we have here, is something called Cleanups in My Community. Cleanups in My Community is a map that has tribal boundaries. It's a publicly available mapping tool that EPA has developed. On it, it has a tribal boundary that we pull in from the 2010 census. And this boundary has federally recognized tribes on it. So right now, I believe it's probably short about 5 or 6 federally recognized tribes because some are done in the last year or so. But it's fairly up to date. As best as we can stay on top of it, and we'll, once the census is updated, this information will be updated on here as well. So this is a screenshot of Cleanups in My Community, and let me grab my little arrow here. Now this map can be zoomed in and out. You can move it to see other states or territories, such as Alaska or Puerto Rico, Hawaii. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see over here, this little gray drop-down box area. This will allow you to define your community. And you can either add an address, you could go by state, view the various layers that we have here. Say, move forward a little bit here. And let's say that I entered Nevada. So we're going to have this screenshot is a map that is zoomed in on Nevada. And this map can be zoomed to see information for various sites. Upon clicking the Layers tab, again, you'll see more information moved here. I'm sorry, I think my computer is being, I'm convinced right now that my computer is possessed. So again, we have these Layers tabs that you can put in here. In that same area, you see the tribal layer. Down here in this section can be seen towards the bottom here. And so when we click that, by clicking this tribal area, you'll see where various tribal areas in the gray text appear on the map itself. And this layer, again, can be filtered by unchecking or checking additional boxes here. So this just gives you a general idea of where in relation to a site you may have tribal property. So this tool is FedFax, and this is specific to the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office. We developed this tool back in 2015. The FIFRO FedFax website contains cleanup status information related to over 2,300 federal facilities that are contained on the EPA's Federal Agency Hazardous Waste Compliance Docket, or you may hear us refer to in conversation as the docket. It has a pretty simple user-friendly interface based very similarly to Cleanups in My Community, where the public can find information on site-specific level or national level information. It'll allow you to look at the list of docket sites or docket facilities, searching by address, city, state, county, or other geographical geographical information. This tends to, we hope it would do, is provide greater transparency to site-specific and national summary information on the 2300 DACA sites. And as part of this mapping tool, we've also implemented a tribal layer so that the tribes can see where these tribal lands are in relation to the federal facility docket sites, those 2300. Or if you wanted to look just specifically to base realignment and closure sites or the 174 NPL sites, you can look at those as well. As you can see, we have the DACA facilities, a DACA facilities tab, which gives you more information on those 2300. We have a dashboard tab, which takes you to an area where you can find more information on the NPL sites, on the base realignment closure sites. We have a site spotlight tab, which will, if we have success stories, information that's in the news, property reuse and transfer guidance, CERCLA guidance related to those issues. And again, the news tab, if there are articles out there as they pertain more specifically to federal facilities, we do have things like our perfluorinated compounds fact sheets and articles about those contaminants. You can find them there as well. We also have additional resources that you guys go through and look at and search through. We have our FIFRA website, and on the FIFRA website, we have a link to our tribal pamphlet. And if you've been to some of the tribal conferences that we've gone to, we have them there, but we also have a PDF version here you can print out. And it gives you a little bit of background about what we do in federal facilities, but it also gives you some links to other federal agencies and other resources within EPA that might be able to help you get the information you're looking for. So that's the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse sheet. We have the American Indian Environmental Office, the Office of International and Tribal Affairs. This is their website, ATSDR, where you can get a lot of information. They have a lot of information that's incredibly useful to tribes. This is their Office of Tribal Affairs. They assist with tribal-specific health needs and evaluations that they've been doing. Some of the sites you're seeing here are the tribal organizations for the other federal agencies. So we have here Department of Agriculture's Tribal Relations, DOD, has their Native American Management System for Environmental Impacts. Department of the Interior, their website as well, and Department of Energy. There's also the Tribal Directory Assessment Tool through HUD. And some additional resources here as well. You talked about the 2016 EPA Guidance for Discussing Tribal Treaty Rights, 2017 Office of Land and Emergency Management. This is our TEK, the TEK guidance, the Considering Traditional Ecological Knowledge During the Cleanup Process. 2017, that's ready. It's our Superfund arm of Superfund, the private side of the house. The Consideration of Tribal Treaty Rights and Traditional Ecological Knowledge in the Superfund Remedial Program. This is Amanda's side of the house. And then Consulting with Indian Tribal Governments at Superfund Sites, a beginner's booklet. All of these links are...
Oh, I think you... Sorry, Mary, to cut you off. I just wanted to remind people but that there's a reference list that has active links to all of the sources that we've referenced in today's webinar. If you want that quick click to get to these items and learn more, that's available for you on the Resources tab.
Took words right out of my mouth then. So speaking of course summary, Emmy?
Yeah, so we're coming to the end of our slides for this webinar. And, you know, just to hit on a few last points, reminders for you to take with you as we're concluding this, remember, the lead agency at federal facilities is primarily responsible for conducting formal consultation with tribal groups. That is where the obligation lies. The regular, you know, those coordination activities, which are more informal in nature between the lead cleanup agency, regulators, and tribal representatives, can help build strong relationships that are going to help you when it comes time to conduct consultation with that big C. And even though EPA is not the lead at federal facilities, EPA can still serve as a resource for tribes in those cleanups by, you know, sharing what the concerns are, better understanding them, where that overlap exists, being able to, you know, advocate for that with the lead agency in resolving RIFSs, proposed plans, and all the technical documents associated with getting to a record of decision in the remedial process. When it comes to conducting formal consultation, remember that's not your coordination activity. That is offered to tribal leadership, so it's going to include those tribal officials and upper management from the other federal agencies. So that's a different group of players. Don't confuse coordination for consultation. Coordination is great and a necessary step to building relationships, but consultation is a bigger event, and it is an ongoing communication. So definitely keep that in mind when you're looking at conducting consultation for the sites that you might be involved in. I'm going to turn quickly to Mary and Amanda. Are there any other final thoughts you wanted to share before we look at entertaining a few questions?
No, thank you, Abby. Yeah, nothing right now.
Okay. So just, again, a reminder for everyone who participated with us today that you could type in your questions into the Q&A box on your screen, and we've answered a few questions so far. We only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to, as questions are coming in, turn to Casey and see, Casey, did you have any final thoughts or questions you wanted to share with the group at this time?
Thank you. Yeah, just a couple of closing comments, and I definitely appreciate all the experience and questions and coordination that has gone into this webinar. It's definitely appreciate the steps, the path forward that it sounds like you know, most of us are on of how we can better coordinate, and you mentioned this, Emma, a very challenging situation. We know that a tribal perspective and say EPA's perspective is not the same, or sometimes not going wanting the same end result. It may be different. So, and that's due to you know, not only the perspectives from both ends, but also the policies and procedures and even the laws that apply to the cleanup efforts. We know that there are, with EPA, you know, they're not bound by any a law to take in any considerations of tribes or even states. But in the bigger perspective, truly they, I feel that they are, because EPA is a government entity that hold the trust responsibility to the tribes, which was signed in agreement when the Nez Perce tribe ceded all that land to the U.S. government in return for the rights that we wanted to retain for ourselves to be Nimiipuu Nez Perce as we always have been. So the treaties were not something that was that our my ancestors was not easy to sign. It was a sacrifice for us to keep this way of life that we have and continued today. So when we ceded that 13 million acres to the United States government, it was in trust that the United States government would hold its own on its side and have that trust responsibility to the tribes through this agreement, through the treaties that have been made since 1855. So from my perspective, EPA does have a law in place regulations, I would say, in place to really listen to tribes, and or at least the Nez Perce tribe, because I can only speak for the Nez Perce, that have that treaty with the United States government. And that being said, I know a lot of regulations and policies and procedures on EPA's and hold, you guys have to hold yourself to a standard as well, and things that may not be within your regulations or policies and procedures may not have tribes in high regards, may not have tribes in honor of what tribes have to say or concerns. So I would really ask not only us as tribes to reflect, because it was mentioned before, you know, we do have to take our own responsibility in ourselves and for our tribe and for our land and water, you know, just as EPA would have to do for itself. So, you know, really look at ourselves and think about not only as a tribe, but as for EPA of what is in our policies and procedures that can definitely bring the tribes in or have the tribes be more a part of what we do. So we're not always at this point we're at now, where it's wanting to get the experience or, you know, what the tribes think of coordination, collaboration, that there's something already in place there that we're both going off of, that we can both respect and move forward with. Would really be a great step for both of us, because we know that each of our entities hold a trust response or have trust responsibility, and if things are not going the way that is set for progress or positive steps forward, that we take a look at what's in place for us now and what can we possibly change or add to make things work better for the tribal and EPA coordination, consultation, and trust responsibility. That'd be my closing comment, and I just want to say thank you for everyone for joining on the webinar as well. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Casey. We're so glad to have been able to hear your perspective, which is helpful to the overall conversation, just as a reality check for some of the challenges that face all of our agencies when we're moving forward with trying to implement cleanup decisions. And I appreciate a lot of the questions that you provided on today's webinar. I'll definitely reach out to follow up on those items and continue this conversation. I know our federal facility agreements don't lay out how to do consultation, and that's not, you know, maybe part of a checklist that makes it easy to make sure it's been done. But I guess the last thing I'd like to leave the group with is just this understanding that with the types of decisions that are made at federal facilities, which tend to be costly in nature, and with EPA's administrator taking a more active role in reviewing these types of cleanup decisions, that question will come up. Have tribal concerns been addressed? And they're going to look to confirm that with the appropriate tribal nation. So I can't recommend enough to engage in coordination early and often, and to ensure that consultation is done appropriately as needed for the cleanup that you're looking at. And again, that isn't something that the lead agency or regulatory agency alone can decide as far as when consultation is appropriate, but that should involve the you know, communication and agreement with all the parties that would be involved in that interaction. So I'll leave the group with that. We're just about out of time, and I'll hand it back over to Pete with any closing logistical remarks. And again, I just want to say thank you to everybody who joined us on today's webinar. We really appreciate it. And Pete, I'm not sure if you're going to come back on the line. We cannot hear you if you are speaking right now.
Pete apparently got knocked off. He lost the phone. He's dialing back in.
All right. Well, again, for everybody who called in today, thank you so much. Remember to fill out your feedback forms. We'd love to hear what you think about today's course, the reference materials and participant manual, all of it. Let us know how you think this is going. We always look for opportunities to improve our webinars, and we'll continue to do so based on your feedback. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Hi, Amy. It's Pete. I'm back on now. So I apologize for the brief interruption there. Just to fix for this afternoon's webinar. As noted here, our next webinar is coming up on February 2nd in this series on reckless circle integration. Most importantly, note on the course schedule, the first three sessions delivered on September 9th, October 10th, and November 4th. Are already available within the Cluent archives. You can click on the address right there, or there is also another link to it in the related URL pod over on your screen to view the archived versions of those first three webinars. And then we'll also go through in a second here, request participation certificates, as Amy mentioned earlier, for those archived versions if you did miss the live delivery. And then obviously today's delivery will be available no later than December 9th, and you'll receive an email notification when that is available within the Cluent archives. And we've got some resources here for staying connected with us on Cluent. Most importantly, our TechDirect email newsletter goes out on the first of every month. If you were subscribed, you should have received December edition yesterday. And always includes a list of upcoming webinars for the particular month. And we'll touch again, once again, on additional resources. A lot of the references, or I shouldn't say a lot, all the references mentioned within the slide presentation, and especially the ones that were listed at the end of the presentation, are available under the Related Links tab on the seminar homepage, which is both linked from the slide and also available in the Related URL pod over on the left. And then we'll roll right into the feedback form, which we are requesting folks fill out, because that is how you will request your participation certificate. This is a refresh on the certificate and documentation options. Amy, is there anything that we need to touch on again here in particular?
Nope, I think we're good.
Okay. Then that. And then most important thing on the feedback form, you will notice that there is a checkbox at the bottom of the form that basically allows you to certify that you either participated live the entire archive version. If you do not check this checkbox, you will not get a certificate. So please make sure to check that checkbox. It's down where it asks you to enter your contact information. All right, so with that, we will go ahead and conclude today's webinar. And just as a reminder, you'll receive an email when this is available within our seminar archives. We hope that you found this to be a valuable use of your time and that we will see you again on a future webinar of today's broadcast.